This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. In the studio with me today, Dr. Satish Balasundaram, consultant oral and maxillofacial surgeon from Subang Jaya Medical Center. And he's here to talk about treating oral maxillofacial conditions. Now, that is a pretty complex area we're talking about. It covers the face, the mouth, and the jaw. There are many different conditions that a specialist like Dr. Satish would be looking at. So we're going to find out what are some of the common issues that he sees and how they can be treated, as well as how they could impact our daily routines. So if you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, Dr. Satish. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Shaoik. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on board.
We're very, very, very interested to find out, actually, because, it's such a broad area, isn't it? Oral and maxillofacial issues. Maybe we can start with understanding the anatomy first. Which areas are we talking about?
All right. As the term implies, oral refers to the oral mouth, the oral cavity. And maxillofacial refers to the face, basically the bone, the skin, the structures around the face. On a very broad term, it's from the hairline to the jawline. That's the area where we treat. And it comprises both the jaws, the bone that supports the eyeballs and the cheekbone, and of course the structures surrounding, like the salivary glands, the muscles, the joints of the jaw.
Okay. And when you say oral, when you say it's the mouth, how much is of an overlap is that with what dentists or orthodontists do?
All right. What general dentists do, well, they do look at the teeth. They look at the supporting structures around the teeth. What orthodontists do, basically, they are specialists who treat or realign malaligned teeth. That's what they do. It's related very much, because we come in somewhere in between. Sometimes there are teeth need to be removed. There are tumors in the jaw that needs treatment before the dentist or the orthodontist can render their part. So that's where we come in. It's quite a gray area, but it's very interrelated.
Okay, all right. When you say hairline to the jawline, are you going into the skull a little bit as well?
No, that's usually within the boundaries of the neurosurgeon. We usually don't go into anywhere near the brain. Maybe the frontal sinus or somewhere there around that structures. But most of the time, this cases are co-managed with our neurosurgeons. Anything involving skull fracture, brain injury, the priority is for the neurosurgeon to come in.
Okay. It's actually really, I'm very curious to find out how you eventually subspecialized into something quite so niche. What got you interested in becoming an oral maxillofacial surgeon?
The common conditions that affecting, as far as this specialty is concerned, in Malaysia is tumours and trauma. We are well aware that our accidents rate, road traffic accidents rates are high. Mm-hmm. And when I just started work, I also noted that many patients were presenting with quite late or advanced stage oral cancers. So I did have quite a number of senior MaxFacs as in oral and maxillofacial surgeons, mm-hmm. who were treating this, who were spending their whole career focus on these areas. And I felt there was a significant need for MaxFacs guys to come into this field. And that was one of the main reasons why I took up this specialty.
And just very briefly, what is the process of specialization? You first specialize as a surgeon?
Yes, you need to have a basic degree in medicine, in dentistry, and also then go through maxillofacial training. Sometimes they don't come in the same orderly sequence. Sometimes we start off with dentistry and then we do our fellowship and then we go on to do medicine. Sometimes some of them do not do medicine as well. Actually, it's based on how much you're going to treat. Within MaxFax itself, there are further subspecialties.
Right, okay.
So there are some who are purely looking at tumors, extensive cases like that. There are some of us who are doing a lot of aesthetic work, implants, bone grafting, and there are some who are very confined within the oral cavity. So depending on how extensive a work you're going to do, that's where the further training, we tend to get further training depending on how much further we're going to treat as well. But to answer your question, what kind of training you need to do, depending on which country you come from, many countries have made it a rule that you need to be doubly qualified in medicine, in dentistry, go through a proper maxillofacial training. Some countries, like ourselves, it's allowed as a singly qualified maxillofacial surgeon as well. But it doesn't matter. What's more important is the patient gets the best outcome, regardless of our basic degrees.
That sounds like a really intensive and rigorous journey that you would have gone through.
It is a lengthy training, but the exposure is essential. You can't be training for 2 to 3 years to be able to treat or recognize some common conditions that present in uncommon ways. So that's why the lengthy training is essential. And you need a knowledge of both. You can't be admitting a patient for a pen facial fracture, for example, a severe facial injury, and you're not able to manage his diabetes or concomitant illness like heart disease and so on. So MaxFax is a specialty that's very much hospital-based. So that's why you need quite a lengthy training for it.
Can I get you to elaborate what you meant about common conditions presenting in uncommon ways?
All right. The kind of conditions I usually see, because I've been focused a lot on tumor work, sometimes this cyst or tumors or even lesions, ulcers in the mouth can present as a very, very benign as in non-cancerous looking lesions. And even the patients don't think it is something sinister. And they also appear very, very non-aggressive kind of lesions until we pick it up. We pick up the signs, we pick up the duration these lesions have been there, and then we biopsy it. Then it comes out as, oh no, it is something more sinister and we need to do more treatment. And it takes years for you to be very familiar with how the oral mucosa, the mucosa refers to the tissue in the mouth, because they go through changes over time. There's wear and tear, there's also friction. So when these changes take place, over time, as you see and say, oh no, this doesn't look like a typical wear and tear kind of lesion, it probably warrants further investigation. So that's what I mean by being able to recognize when to intervene, when to just monitor.
Okay. How much, again, I'm asking about overlap, because I understand that head and neck surgeons would also look at some types of oral cancers.
Yes, absolutely. As far as all this while when I've been training and practicing, I tend not to just do it alone. Coming back to areas like a tongue cancer, for example, usually in my team, we have the oncologists on board, the speech therapists, the anesthetists, the radiologists, and also the ENT surgeons on board. And if it's a very extensive tumor, we have our plastic and reconstructive colleagues on board. What happens to the patient is all of us are combined. One person removes the tumor. One person reconstructs the tumor. Another person makes sure after the surgery, the patient is well taken care of in ICU. So in these days, we rarely manage such more terminal conditions or extensive tumors as a single man. It's a joint modality, multi-modality treatment.
So you look at who has different strengths
yes.
in a team
yes.
That would be best focused on certain areas.
Yes, you're right.
All right. Because you've brought up tumors, I do want to delve more into that as well as one of the common and also, I suppose, requiring quite a lot of attention, the way that you would identify oral tumors and what kind of treatment options and where does surgery come in. So that's something I want to get into when we come back from the break. Dr. Satish Balasundram, consultant oral and maxillofacial surgeon from Subang Jaya Medical Center, is in the studio talking about oral maxillofacial conditions. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. In the studio with me, Dr. Satish Balasundram, consultant oral and maxillofacial surgeon from Subang Jaya Medical Center, talking about the treatment of oral maxillofacial conditions. Now, it's a very broad anatomical area that we are talking about. Oral meaning the mouth cavity, maxillofacial meaning the face. And so, Dr. Satish, you've actually defined it as anything from the hairline to the jawline to give us a sort of a broad idea of understanding where you would focus on. Now, you've talked about tumors and trauma being the main issues that bring patients through your doors. If we could go directly into tumors, actually, and I understand, and you mentioned it earlier as well, you know, it would start off with what could potentially be a very benign looking lesion, an ulcer, or a growth. Do you want to help us understand how do you define an oral tumor, and where would they commonly form in the oral maxillofacial area?
Okay, coming by definition, tumor, something that grows with usually without any aggravating factors. It grows by itself, it grows out of control. But broadly, you can separate them to benign or malignant. Benign meaning they are not cancerous, and malignant meaning they are cancerous. Now, these tumors or lesions itself, we can again go by the structures. That means whether they're affecting the skin, whether they're affecting the bone, or whether they're affecting the other units within the oral cavity, basically the cheek, the tongue, the floor of the mouth. Mm-hmm. Now, coming to tumor, if it's a bony tumor, it's not uncommon. I see an average of 1 to 2 new cases every other week. That's how common they are.
One to two new cases every other week.
Yes, because the center where we work is sort of a tertiary center, so they tend to
get referrals.
Mm-hmm. These bony tumors, when do you treat, when not to treat? We need to see, first and foremost, are they benign or not? Secondly, are they potentially growing at an aggressive manner? Mm-hmm. And are they in any way disrupting the patient's functional status and, mm-hmm. of course, aesthetic, the face? So if they are in any way affecting these areas, then surgery would be an option we need to keep in mind. Having said that, when it's something malignant, then, of course, from a surgical perspective, I would say it's best to remove it. But other factors come in, again, to see whether the tumor has spread to other organs or not. And will the surgery leave the patient with a very poor quality of life, very debilitated, unable to swallow, unable to talk? So we need to look at that. And overall, can the patient survive the surgery? Because mm-hmm. you're not talking about a 1-2 hour surgery, you're talking about 15-hour, 16-hour surgery. Mm-hmm. And if the patient is very frail at the age of 70, with a tumor spreading to other parts, maybe this is where our oncologists plays a very, very important role, where they can come in to do induction or neoadjuvant therapies to shrink the tumor. Then the surgeon can go in and remove a smaller part of the organ involved. So these are the factors, whether it's benign, whether it's malignant, is it aggressively growing? Mm-hmm. Will it result in the patient being very debilitated after the surgery? Can we cure it? our one most important thing as far as ablative cancer surgery is concerned is we can't remove a tumor cukup makan. We have to remove with an excess healthy tissue around the tumor. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine if the oral cavity is so small and all other structures, nerve, is also nearby, mm-hmm. and we need to get a good clearance before we decide, can we remove this tumor? We need to be sure we can remove it totally, not halfway.
I see. And with enough excess as well.
Yes.
So that you can get anything that's leaked over, so to speak. That's probably not the best word.
By our guidelines, by our criteria, we need to have, depending on what kind of cancer it is, you need to have 5 to 10 millimeters of healthy tissue around the cancer.
And you're right. That's a lot when you're talking about the oral cavity.
So if you're talking about a base of tongue, 5-10 millimeters down, you are into the neck mm-hmm. already. And then there are other structures there, nerves running there, big blood vessels running there. So how are you going to clear it?
Mm-hmm.
So these are the factors that come into play.
Can you explain a little bit about what kind of adjuvant therapies that an oncologist would use that could help to shrink the tumor?
Usually it's induction chemotherapy. Sometimes they go ahead. If the tumor is very, very extensive, let's say the tumor is already beginning to be fixated, then they may come on board with not only neoadjuvant chemotherapy, they may go ahead with adjuvant radiotherapy as well. These are the kind of modalities that come in. But mm-hmm. what we tend to do nowadays is once we have our MDT, our multidisciplinary team, once we assess the patient and all the scans and we stage the illness, we would tell the patient, we would decide as a team first what's the best approach. What we tend to do more frequently is we may give a new adjuvant chemo if the tumor is too big, and then we go in for surgery to clear the tumor. And after the surgery, the patient goes through radiotherapy to make sure we got all of it out.
Mm.
Yeah, that's for a curable cancer, that's what we tend to do.
Okay. So then what are the side effects that would be expected, especially with the use of the adjuvant chemotherapy and the radiotherapy afterwards?
Okay. Adjuvant chemotherapy, actually, it is not as bad or as aggressive as what has been portrayed. When I used to be working in another center, because we were short of oncologists, what we had is a visiting oncologist would prescribe the treatment and we helped to carry it out. Adjuvant chemotherapy, fewer cycles. Again, I'm not an expert in this field, mm-hmm. so I have my limitation to explain. You can have usually, besides more aggravated ulcers in the mouth, sometimes you talk about, in medical terms, neurotoxicity, cardiotoxicity, the electrolyte imbalance going away. These are so rare, actually. Mm-hmm. So new adjuvant chemotherapy usually does not give out so much of side effects. But I think it's best for oncologists to answer that part.
Okay.
As far as radiotherapy is concerned, because we see a lot of patients after radiotherapy. Now, debilitation is much less if we don't reconstruct after surgery. With radiotherapy, you can expect skin changes. You can expect trismus, which means limited mouth opening. You can expect a long-term risk or complication of jaw bone necrosis. Mm. In crude terms, is the bone rotting off. Because mm-hmm. radiotherapy would decrease the blood supply to the jaw bones. So these are the kinds of risks that you can anticipate with anyone who goes through these therapies. And during chemo, the patients also, immune-wise, they're suppressed. So any potentially carious tooth or decayed tooth can give a flared-up infection.
All that sounds quite alarming, but you've also used the word curable.
Yes.
So what is the prognosis for an oral cancer patient, if they have gone through, these therapies with chemo, with the surgery and with the radiotherapy?
Okay.
What does curable mean, actually?
Curable means we have got rid of the tumor in total. It does not come back within that 6 months to 12 months period of time. Mm-hmm. Then there are other terms. You call it second primaries or recurrence. But coming back to the question you're asking, prognosis depends on the staging of the illnesses. So if the patient is stage one, then you're looking at something above 75% chance of the patient surviving more than 5 years. And then with stage two, it gets down. Stage four, which is almost terminal, it can go down as low as 25% chance of being alive 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of the treatment modality used, if the intention is to cure the patient of that cancer, that's the kind of numbers you're looking at.
Okay. And, you know, when it comes to staging, mm-hmm. obviously what you want is for patients to come in and to be able to identify as early as possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we were speaking earlier, you said that when you were doing training, you had your mentors who were seeing a lot of late stage oral cancers. Mm-hmm. Is that still the case now? Has anything changed in the trends?
There has been change in trends. The last 6 to 7 years, we are seeing oral cancers presenting in younger populations. Younger as in their 30s, in their early 40s. And these are patients who don't have any risk factors like smoking or in combination with alcohol-containing beverages. We are seeing the good thing is these patients present earlier, usually stage one, stage two. They are more aware and they present. And the curable rate, the prognosis is much better.
So what can we look out for in terms of early signs?
Early signs. Most common one would be a non-healing lesion. So if it's an ulcer and it's not healing, if there's a lesion that starts to bleed spontaneously, if you're developing numb patches around your jaw, your face, numb, you know, like pins and needles, if you're developing that, then you need to get it scanned, get it checked out.
Okay. And from tumors, I'd like to move on to trauma now.
Sure.
As you have pointed out as well, road traffic accidents mm-hmm. are very, very common in Malaysia, a huge cause for concern. It is a very, very high-ranking cause of death. And of course, related to that, injuries as well. When we talk about facial trauma, again, a broad term, and mm-hmm. it can cover many different types of injuries as well.
Yes.
Could you help us to understand what kinds of injuries you'd be looking at?
All right, about 70 to 80% of my facial trauma patients come with head injury as well. Head injury, we refer to the brain injury. So things like concussion, bleeding in the brain, they come in together with that. Other concomitant injuries could be also to the ear canal, the meatus, or a deep laceration through the neck. This can be very, very severe, life-threatening. But being confined to the facial region itself, the kind of injuries that we tend to see, if you go by structures, the skin, so you have abrasion wounds, and then you have cuts, lacerations, and then you have more severe ones with tissue loss. So basically, because of the impact or because of the friction during the injury, the patient has lost some part of the skin. And then when you get on to the deeper structures, usually it's the muscle, usually it's the bone. So the patient can end up with multiple fracture in the face, and that's what we call panfacial fractures. I see an average of, when I used to work down south in Malaysia as well, we used to see about 2 to 3 new fractures every week. So, mm-hmm. and mostly were motorcycle involve injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Back here in Klang Valley, because I think there are many hospitals as well, so within the center where I work, I think we can see an average of 1 or 2 fractures every 2 to 3 weeks, but they're happening more frequently than that, just that they don't come to my centers. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. When you talk about motorcycle accidents contributing mm-hmm. to facial trauma, mm-hmm. Does the use of helmets negate much of that?
It negates the severity of the head injury. Yeah, unless they're wearing and walking around with a full face helmet, most of them are not. So one of the most common fractures is fracture of the mandible, the lower jaw, because the helmet covers the upper half. Mm-hmm. It leaves the lower jaw exposed. Mm. So when a patient falls with an impact to the chin, impact to the face, they sustain fractures there. But in Malaysia, the trend is also changing. It's not as high. The causative factor for traumas, fractures, is not. It is still road traffic accidents, or RTA, is still the highest. But we're getting more interpersonal violence, assault cases. Mm. And then we're also getting, with the growing elderly population, we got fall injuries. Mm-hmm. So we just published a paper just this year about, I think we took 4 hospitals, about 600 patients. And we noticed, yes, the high bulk causative factor for the fracture is usually RTAs, followed by assault, and followed by falls. And then you have sports injuries, you have other causes, very, very low down the list. Mm. In more developed countries, when I was training, the main causative factor were usually interpersonal violence, assault.
Okay.
All right. Over here is still RTAs.
RTAs, road traffic accidents. I'm interested about falls because I understand that falls among the elderly, a big area that we're always concerned about would be hip fractures.
Yes.
How? What's the proportion of falls contributing to facial trauma?
Yeah. Okay, maybe out of every 15 to 20 hip fractures, you can have one facial injury. Mm. That's the kind of average we see.
Okay.
Elderly, depending on why did they fall, did they trip over? If they trip over, it's more commonly a facial injury first, because they trip forward, the face impacts
first.
The floor. But if they fall on their back, they slip, or they fall because of postural hypertension, for example, they feel a bit dizzy, and then it's more likely they will land on their back. So that's where the part that contacts or absorbs the impact first tends to fracture first.
Mm.
So that's why it's not as common as hip fractures, but it is happening.
Mm. And, you know, for you, what are the complexities when dealing with an elderly patient?
These patients usually have other comorbidities. They have other illnesses. Treating the fracture alone is usually not very difficult, but the healing period is lengthened.
Mm-hmm.
And for the lower jaw, for example, over time, the blood supply to the lower jaw will reduce. So when you go in to do a surgery for a broken jaw, the wound may never heal. That's one risk. Two, when you do the surgery, when you plan for anesthesia, if the patient has heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, as I said, it's not about the surgery itself, but when they come out of the operating theater and the following days, any of this concomitant illness can predispose to higher risk other events while they are in the hospital.
Mm, all right. What are the potential complications that will be caused by facial trauma, either if they're not adequately treated, or if they don't heal well?
Now, it depends on the time of intervention. It depends on the severity of the injury. It depends on how bad the impact was. If you're looking at injuries with tissue loss, let's say it was a bad fracture, the bone is all comminuted, as in broken to pieces. If you intervene fairly early, that means within the first 1 week or so, and then you are able to reconstruct the area, actually, the defect is not as bad as what it seems. Facial accidents, facial injury at the time of presentation, they can look very gory.
Mm.
But when it comes to the treatment and outcome, they are usually quite favorable. Now, it becomes more complicated with the higher likelihood of complications when you don't intervene early. We still have, unfortunately, some fractures that are being treated late. That means you're looking at 2 weeks, 3 weeks down the line.
Oh, that's very long.
By then, what happens is the fracture, especially in a healthy young man, because it's healthy, the wound starts to heal. So if even if it's displaced, the wound tries to heal in a displaced position.
Mm.
So when you go in after 2 weeks, you have to actually refracture the area, realign the broken bone, and secure it. So that gives rise to higher likelihood of nerve injury, less favorable outcome. All right.
Okay. And another area that I'd just like to touch briefly on when we come back from another quick break will be temporomandibular joint disorders. And to try and understand what is the temporomandibular joint and how we can look at managing the issues that are specifically related to the TMJ. In the studio with me, Dr. Satish Balasundram, consultant oral and maxillofacial surgeon from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We're talking about treating oral maxillofacial conditions, of course. Just very quickly, if you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. This is Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik. I have with me Dr. Satish Balasundram, consultant oral and maxillofacial surgeon from Subang Jaya Medical Center, and we're talking about his area of specialty, treating oral maxillofacial conditions. We've covered oral cancers or oral tumors. We've covered facial trauma, and those are largely due to road traffic accidents, and to a lesser extent due to violence as well as falls among the elderly. I want to very quickly touch on temporomandibular joint disorders, Dr. Satish. Can you explain what is the temporomandibular joint?
All right. The temporomandible. Temporal refers to the bone that is just at the side of your skull bone, just above your ears, covered by your hair. And then mandible refers to your lower jaw. So the joint that attaches your lower jaw to the base of your skull, that's the temporomandibular joint. Similar to your other joints, your knee joint, your shoulder joint, this joint also facilitates you talking, eating, and chewing. And it's a complex structure because you have many muscles going around the joint. You have a disc in that joint area itself. And the joint glides through as you perform your daily function. So that's the temporomandibular joint.
And that's the joint that we literally we feel it when we are moving our jaw. Is that right?
Yes. If you were to put your finger right in front of your ears and you open and close your mouth, you'd feel a ball moving front and back. And that's the joint.
Okay. So what are the common problems that you see affecting this joint?
Okay. This joint condition, if you want to broadly look at them, you look at them as in intra-articular or extra-articular. Articular refers to the joint area itself. So the kind of common conditions, the most common that I see in my clinic are those with disc displacement. In a medical term, we call it TMD, temporomandibular joint disorder, with internal derangement. Basically, the disc does not sit in one place, it starts moving in and out. And as a result, there's disturbances in the musculature that facilitates your mouth opening and closing. And the patient starts presenting with discomfort and even pain.
Okay. You know, I know somebody who, when he was younger and playing hockey, was hit in the face, the side of the face with the hockey puck. And from that point on, whenever he moves his jaw, let's say to chew food, you can hear a clicking sound.
Yes.
Is that any cause for concern? Is there any need to actually have it looked at?
Most of the time, no. The reason you're feeling or you're hearing that noise is because the disc is too mobile, is moving in and out of the joint. See, when your jaw when your joint glides out of the socket, the disc, rather than being in the correct position, tends to get displaced to the front or back.
Mm-hmm.
And when you move your jaw and the disc is displaced, you do hear the joint. If the disc does not result in the patient having a locked jaw, that means all of a sudden he seems that he can't move his jaw,
mm-hmm.
then yes, it warrants attention. If no, it's a sound but barely audible to the others, no social issues with that sound,
mm.
then no, it's just conservative management.
Okay. But in instances where, we would need to go beyond conservative management, mm-hmm. What would you do in the case of the disc displacement?
All right. We usually need to, again, stage it as well. I usually use Wilkie's staging. It helps me to decide what would be the best treatment for it. We would preferably get an MRI, a scan, to look at the disc itself when the patient is opening his mouth, when he's closing, to visualize how badly it's being displaced. And we would also would like to assess the muscles around. Are they inflamed? Are they swollen? Now, coming by the staging, by this criteria, there's so many other criteria. It's just, as I said, it helps me treat them better. If the disc gets displaced too often and the patient ends up with a locked jaw very often,
mm-hmm.
or the patient ends up with severe pain very often, and when he opens his mouth, his jaw starts deviating to one side, then it warrants some intervention. Things like arthrosynthesis, that's something, it's like sticking two needles into the joint space that we do. It's also arthroscopy, putting a very, very fine scope into the joint space, localizing where the disc is and flushing out that area to push back the disc.
Mm-hmm.
That is something we do as well. But we also need to look at the long-term outcome. We can't just stick a needle there or do something invasive if there's not enough evidence for long-term good outcome for that procedure. Yes, so if a patient has very severe TMD and the conservative management is not helping, then we go one step further. We can make soft spleens for them to wear. It's like a mouth guard, but custom-made for them. If that doesn't work as well, then we go into the next stage, getting invasive into the joint.
And that's surgery?
Yes. One is not really a surgery. It's more of flushing out the joint,
mm-hmm.
and repositioning the disc.
Okay.
It's a very minor half an hour procedure.
Okay.
Surgery, if it's a very bad one, if it's involving the bone and the bone is sort of stuck there, then you would need to replace. Just like you do knee replacement, you do jaw joint replacement.
You know, I'm always curious, when an episode of lockjaw happens, what do you do? Because it's so frightening.
Okay, lockjaw, by layman's terms, there are two kinds. One is complete dislocation. That means your whole jaw joint is displaced outside. The whole bone has come out,
mm-hmm.
and it cannot go back because the muscles are in spasm. They just have contracted and you can't move it.
Right.
This is when the patient really presents in our emergency with an open mouth. They cannot close at all.
Mm.
And that you need somebody of this kind of training to come in to reduce it back, just like a dislocated shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But the other locking thing is whereby when the joint is trying to glide in and out while they're opening, closing their mouth, the disc sort of obstructs it. It's usually temporary.
Mm-hmm.
So if, let's say, you're talking and you're eating and suddenly at 1 centimeter opening, you don't seem to be able to close your jaw or move your jaw.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's, if you just swallow a painkiller and you just relax for a while, it will go back, usually. So you don't have to worry to that extent. This is when a disc is displayed.
Mm.
But if it's dislocated, then you need help.
Okay, there's a difference. Displacement and dislocation.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to anything to do with the face, especially if we go back to the issue of trauma, mm-hmm. When you have things like cuts and fractures requiring surgery, it's difficult for people to, it's something that many people are fearful of. Mm-hmm. We are afraid of some sort of permanent scarring on our face and those kinds of issues. How do you talk patients through this process of, I guess, psychologically accepting, you know, how their face may change with whatever condition it may be?
What helps is our newer scans modalities, we are able to reconstruct on the severity of the fractures as well. And then we can put it up in 3D recon and tell them, look, this is how bad you are. If you don't do any treatment, you get this treatment, you have four scars here, here, here. And over time, the scars will fade off. It won't bother you so much. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways we tend to use. Another thing is usually patients with maxillofacial injuries cannot eat mm-hmm. because the jaw is maybe in three pieces. So they will listen straight away. I can't even close my mouth. Mm-hmm. So they would. It's a bit easier to convince them. Look, you will end with a wide open jaw, non-healing jaw, if you don't do anything soon. Mm-hmm. All right. As far as convincing them about the long-term possible complications, by our data, actually the long-term complications is not as bad as what it seems. We are looking at a nerve injury rate at about 5 to 6%. We are looking at the infection rate at the same range. All right, as far as defects, occlusal derangement, that means the bite run, they are all much lower than that. This, mm-hmm. we are looking at multi-hospital audits. Mm-hmm. So I think if the patient is well-informed, giving them these numbers helps them as well.
And this one you're talking about in relation to treating...
fractures, facial yeah. fractures mm. and injuries, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
After treating them with our surgeries, our plates and screws, that's the outcome.
Mm. How many patients would need some form of supportive therapy after surgery, perhaps in terms of speech and language, helping them with swallowing conditions and
for
things
trauma?
Like, yes.
If it doesn't involve the joint area, actually, you're looking at only as little as 5 to 10%. Very few. Because the joint area is the only area that we need to immobilize the jaw for a while. We tie up both the jaws and they can't open their mouth for a few weeks. And once we release the tying up, there will be stricture. They can't open and we need to engage in them some sort of physio to guide them to stretch their mouth open. But the other parts of the facial skeleton that has fractured, they rarely need any physiotherapy at all.
Mm, okay.
It's, yeah. Mm.
What about in oral cancers?
Oral cancers, yes. That is a whole different spectrum. Calafrisos, 2015, he published a paper. He was my consultant. We worked on this data of all his patients. Let's say your swallowing ability out of 10 was at a level of 7 when you presented with the cancer. After the treatment, most of the patients, if you did the whole regime reconstruction and all that, mm-hmm. most of the patients went back to a grade of 6 or 7 mm. pre-surgery state. Mm-hmm. But the rehabilitation, this is where the speech and swallowing therapies comes in to train them over time. It doesn't happen over 1 month. Mm. It can take up to a year mm. for them to be rehabilitated. Mm. But if the patient is prepared to face it, yes, we do such surgeries.
Okay. All right. Do you have a final message for us, Dr. Satish, with regard to oral maxillofacial?
I think the other field I just want to quickly highlight is infections. In a well-educated populations, they have better oral hygiene, better oral care, so they rarely present with severe infections. But you may have heard or come across a patient having a simple dental infection that flared up to the patient being unable to breathe and then becoming septic and so on. I think that is one area where you need regular good oral hygiene practice. Secondly, I think the government has a role to play here. We have highlighted enough the population that is mainly affected by facial trauma is the young men who mm-hmm. are going to work. Mm-hmm. So this trauma, accident rates that are high, is affecting us economically as well. And if you continue encouraging motorcycle use, but not enforcing the safety rules, we are just going to continue treating the fractures without reducing them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's mean. As far as oral cancer is concerned, I think you need your I have maybe out of 10 patients, 4 patients that come in because they are just overly anxious. A small ulcer that is healing, they are just anxious about it. But it's most of the time something benign. So I think if you do have doubts about any lesion in your mouth at all, do come and see any MaxFax, any properly qualified trained surgeon. Mm-hmm. They should be able to guide you along the right path.
Okay, right. Thank you very much. That was Dr. Satish Balasundaram, Consultant Oral and Maxillofacial Surgeon from Subang Jaya Medical Center. And we've gone through several common oral maxillofacial conditions that he sees, oral cancers, facial trauma, and also highlighted infections. We should not let dental infections, we should not let dental hygiene slip, because infections can turn deadly. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.